Chapter 91. The day after, dearest William had achieved the perusal of one of her epistles, the truth must be told, that dearest William did not hurry himself to break the seal of Miss Dobbin's letter, but waited for a particularly favorable day and mood for doing so. A fortnight before, moreover, he had written to scold her for telling those absurd stories to Mrs. Osborne, and had dispatched a letter in reply to that lady, undeceiving her with respect to the reports concerning him, and assuring her that he had no sort of present intention of altering his condition. Two or three nights after the arrival of the second package of letters, the Major had passed the evening pretty cheerfully at Lady O'Dowd's house, where Glorvina thought that he listened with rather more attention than usual to the meeting of the waiters, the minstrel boy, and one or two other specimens of song with which she favored him. The truth is, he was no more listening to Glorvina than to the howling of the jackals in the moonlight outside, and the delusion was hers as usual, and having played his game of chess with her, cribbage with the surgeon was Lady O'Dowd's favorite evening pastime. Major Dobbin took leave of the colonel's family at his usual hour, and retired to his own house. There on his table, his sister's letter lay reproaching him. He took it up, ashamed rather of his negligence regarding it, and prepared himself for a disagreeable hour's communing with that crabbed-handed absent relative. It may have been an hour after the Major's departure from the Colonel's house Sir Michael was sleeping the sleep of the just. Glorvina had arranged her black ringlets in the innumerable little bits of paper, in which it was her habit to confine them. Lady O'Dowd, too, had gone to her bed in the nuptial chamber, on the ground floor, and had tucked her mosquito curtains round her fair form, when the guard at the gates of the commanding officer's compound beheld Major Dobbin, in the moonlight, rushing towards the house with a swift step and a very agitated countenance, and he passed the sentinel, and went up to the windows of the colonel's bedchamber. "O'Dowd, Colonel," said Dobbin, and kept up a great shouting. "Heavens, Major," said Glorvina of the curl papers, putting out her head to, from her window. "What is it, Dob, me boy?" said the colonel, expecting there was a fire in the station, or that the route had come from headquarters. I must have leave of absence. I must go to England on the most urgent private affairs," Dobbin said. "Good heavens, what has happened?" thought Glorvina, trembling with all the papillotes. "I want to be off now tonight," Dobbin continued, and the colonel, getting up, came out to parley with him. In the postscript of Miss Dobbin's cross letter, the Major had just come upon a paragraph to the following effect: "Drove yesterday to see your old acquaintance, Mrs. Osborne. The wretched place they live at, since they were bankrupts, you know, Mr. S. To judge from a brass plate on the door of his hut, it is little better, is a coal merchant. The little boy, your godson, is certainly a fine child, though forward, and inclined to be saucy and self-willed. But we have taken notice of him as you wish it, and have introduced him to his aunt, Miss O, who was rather pleased with him. Perhaps his grandpapa, not the bankrupt one, who is almost doting, but Mr. Osborne, of Russell Square, may be induced to relent towards the child of your friend, his erring and self-willed son. And Amelia will not be ill-disposed to give him up. The widow is consoled, and is about to marry a reverend gentleman, the Rev. Mr. Binney, one of the curates of Brompton. A poor match. But Mrs. O is getting old, and I saw a great deal of gray in her hair. She was in very good spirits. And your little godson overate himself at our house. Mama sends her love with that of your affectionate, Anne Dobbin." Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.